Hey, here's what's going on in Backlog Land this week. First of all, I did a couple of guest appearances. You can hear me over on Left Behind Game Club talking about the favorite games that we played at PAX East and talking about the experience in general. And if you listen to my episode about PAX East, you can listen to that one and hear about a bunch of other games that I didn't get a chance to play. So once again, that's Left Behind Game Club. And I also joined the Gaming Duo podcast for a bit of the daily news and talking about some trends in the gaming industry and what kinds of games people are playing. Once again, that's the Gaming Duo. You can go check that out. I'll put links to both of these down in the show notes. Also, on this month's episode of Tales from the Way Backlog over on Patreon, I am playing Ultima 1. So if you want to hear my thoughts on an old-ass computer game, you can head over to Patreon. At the $5 tier and higher, you'll get that bonus series. And that leaves me also to thank the patrons for helping to support the show. Big shout out and thank you to Chris Nelson, the Top 3 Podcast crew, Chris Copleen, Eric Guess, Rick Firestone, Nick Ficori, Jill, Jeff, formerly Jerf, Kieran, Soccer, ZNA, Cupcake, Kyle, Christian S, Matt aka Stormageddon, JD, Doug Leaf, Jason Emery, Brian Skirsha, Randall, Jake Martin, Jenny E, and many more. And with all that being said, we're on to the case of the Golden Idol. Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Jackson, and you're listening to Tales from the Backlog. This is a video games review podcast where each week I'm joined by a guest to bring a game out of the backlog, play it, and discuss. My guest today is a friend of the show, a Twitch streamer, YouTuber, and keeper of the Golden Idol, Nina Struggles. Nina, welcome.
Hi, I'm so excited to join you today.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I'm a fan of your Twitch channel. You have some really fun streams over there, and I noticed you have a penchant for detective games, so this is a perfect game for us today.
Oh yeah, this is absolutely perfect. I love puzzles, I love detective games, I love something where you have that aha moment, so yeah. You know, this is right up my alley.
All right, yeah, so today we're going to be talking about The Case of the Golden Idol, which is a point-and-click detective puzzle game developed by Color Grey Games and published by PlayStack for PC and Mac in 2022. I believe it's on Switch now also. I think I heard about people playing this on Switch. So yeah, go check that out. If you're Switch only, I think you can play this. If this is your first time listening to the show, thank you for stopping by the way. But if this is your first time listening to the show, the way spoilers work in this podcast is we are not going to spoil anything about the puzzles or about the stories. I'm going to spoil the first puzzle. It's like 5 minutes long, trust me. And then after that, no spoilers whatsoever about puzzles and story until the spoiler section in the back half of the podcast. And if you want to know when that is, you can check down in the show notes. There's a timestamp for when the spoilers begin. And if you don't know what The Case of the Golden Idol is, we prepared some elevator pitches for today's podcast. I say The Case of the Golden Idol is true deduction puzzles in expressive freeze frames. And what's the deal with that idol anyway? Nita, what's your elevator pitch?
Mine is, this is for the average puzzle player. And it's just a fun game for anyone who likes to overthink their puzzles.
Uh-huh.
So that's me. They give you a moment in time that you have to analyze, and I think it's great.
Yeah, and we definitely, I think in the spoiler section, we'll have a couple of puzzles where we sat there staring at it like, what am I missing here? And then when it all clicks into place, you get that awesome moment. This game's full of those too. I played this on PC. It took me 8 hours to play the main game, and then I played both DLCs. Each one took me about 2 hours, so 12 hours total. Does that sound right to you?
That sounds very correct.
Awesome. Good. It means that both of us took about the same amount of time doing these puzzles, so we're on about the same playing field here. We always start out the show talking about our histories with the game. We talk a little bit about the genre as well. So we'll kick it to you first, Nina. I asked you to come on and talk about this game because you do a lot of puzzle game streams. What was it about The Case of the Golden Idol that appealed to you?
It's just the puzzles. That's it. Like, I came in to Golden Idol because I like the puzzles, mm-hmm. and I played them as they came out. So the first game, fantastic. Just a fantastic introduction to the story. And the DLCs add to that story. So mm-hmm. immediately, day one release, I'm sitting there playing it because I have to.
Nice. So, like, before the game came out, did you see this as like something that's coming up on the horizon?
Yes.
That you're waiting for?
This was something I was waiting for a while because I saw it and was like, this is exactly like Return of the Obra Dinn.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, that seems like something I would like. So that is definitely something I was looking out for. And then the DLCs came in and I was like, day one, buy that, install it, play it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you if you had played Return of the Obra Dinn. Now, looking back on it, that seems like a silly question. that was what made me want to play Case of the Golden Idol too, but I didn't know about this before it came out. It was only after it came out and it started to get some buzz and people started to make those comparisons where it was like, hey, if you liked the way Return of the Obra Dinn handles its puzzles,
yes.
or its one giant puzzle, then here's another game that was based on that, inspired by that. Even the developers quote Obra Dinn as like one of their main inspirations. So that's one of my favorite games of all time, Obra Dinn. So when all of that like comparison starts to come out, I was like, oh, okay, well, this is going on the wish list. And then like as a capital G gamer, it sat on the wish list for a long time. Yeah. I didn't buy it. Actually, it was a gift to me. We do a Secret Santa in our Discord server, and one of the community members, Soccer, bought this game for me. So thank you, Soccer. And I was really glad to get this in the Secret Santa. And to get into some opening thoughts here, I think, first of all, I think this game's really, really, really good. Like, puzzles are really, really well made. There's a little bit of me that thinks those comparisons to Obra Dinn, like, help people get in the door and help people get interested, but ultimately don't actually help this game in comparison. Like, I think there's a couple of things about this game that are just a little bit inelegant compared to Obra Dinn, but that's like saying, like, you know, this pizza I ate was really fucking good. It's not as good as the best pizza I ever had. It's kind of like saying that, like, this game's still really good. The puzzles are great. They're really well designed. And as a little bonus that I did not expect, and I can't wait to talk about this in the spoiler section, I think the story's really cool in this game. And I was very surprised by that.
Yeah. Going back to Obra Dinn, like, I loved Obra Dinn's story. But the thing mm-hmm. with Obra Dinn and what I didn't like was that it made me so nauseous to play.
Oh.
The motion sickness really got to me in Obra Dinn because I think it's beautiful to look at, but to move that quickly between scenes and like walking around was hard on my eyes. Uh-huh. But that's why I liked Golden Idol so much because it's giving you the same kind of game mechanic. It's like trying to figure out the mystery at the same time of like, this is what the only information you're given. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very well done. But I'll say that is the difference between the two games and was actually gave it the upper hand for me.
Yeah, for sure. Motion sickness will tank even the best of games.
Yes.
For sure. So we are going to listen to a little bit of music from The Case of the Golden Idol. And then when we come back, we will set up the story, talk about it a little bit, and then, you know, talk about puzzles and stuff like that. So in The Case of the Golden Idol, you start with chapter one, which is called Complications in the Family. And then scenario one, there are four chapters, three scenarios each, and then there's DLCs after that. The first one kind of tutorializes the mechanics for you, gives you a little bit of light in deduction, where they give you two people. There's a man named Albert Cloudsley and a doctor named Oberon Geller. And they tutorialize the deduction where you have to figure out, like, okay, who's the doctor? Who's Cloudsley? You look in their belongings, you see Geller's got a scalpel, he's the doctor, et cetera, et cetera. So you figure out their identities. They are on an expedition to Monkey Paw Island, where surely nothing bad will ever happen.
Nothing bad would happen. No.
And they go there and they find this golden idol, the one from the title. And in the first scene, you see, like we said in the elevator pitch, each scene is set up as like this freeze frame, kind of. There's a little bit of motion that's just kind of rewind, play, but very short like that. And someone has pushed somebody off of a cliff, and you have to figure out the detective mechanics in order to figure out who is pushing who off of the cliff. And it's a nice little tutorial. It's about 5 minutes long. And then you're off into future scenarios. And something cool about this game, I didn't know anything about the story setup or anything like that before I started. This story takes place over the course of many years, following the Cloudsley family, the path of the golden idol. You'll learn what the idol is, how it works, what its powers are, and see what influence the Cloudsley family and the idol have on society through decades, generations. And I think this is really cool, like, to follow these characters. Kind of, you actually do get to know some of these characters and their personalities a little bit as they go. And then as it continues through the years, a story develops. And that was the thing that kind of stood out to me, was I thought that the story that they had to tell here was really creative and fun.
Yeah, no, this, I love the fact that it takes place over decades.
Yeah.
Like, this is a whole full built out story, because I didn't know that going into it. I was like, oh, this is a murder mystery. We're going to figure out what happens and then move on. But that first scene was someone getting thrown off a cliff and you have to figure out what's happening. And that kicks off the entire story for the rest of the game is fantastic. And the thing that I liked the most about it is that it's one moment in time.
Yeah.
It's something that you have to pay attention to so many different things. And that's what is kicking off the gameplay of, like, figuring stuff out.
Yeah. It's one of those stories where, so, like, every chapter gives you one snapshot. It's always somebody has died. Part of the mystery is figuring out how they died and maybe who killed them and how, etc. Sort of like Obra Dinn. But that's not all that you have to figure out. So that's a very small part of it, but in those details also are this continuing story. And if you're paying attention to details, if you're taking podcast notes like me, the story will, like, reveal itself to you as you go. Eventually, the game will make you, like, state what happened in the story, but you can figure it out before then if you're paying attention to the clues and connecting, like, oh, that guy was in this scene two chapters ago, and now he's here doing this. So that becomes part of his tale. And I just didn't know any of this going in. And it becomes really interesting when you start learning about the golden idol and what it can do and how people are using it. It's cool, like science fiction.
Yeah.
The DLC stories, I forgot to write. I think the first one's called The Spider of Lanka. And then the other one's The Lemurian Vampire, I believe. The two DLC stories tell the backstory of the idol and basically, like, walk you up to the moment that happens when someone's getting shoved off of a cliff in that first chapter. So if you play through the game and you enjoy, well, mostly if you enjoy the puzzles, but if you enjoy the story too, the DLC deals with backstory. There's also some interesting, like, themes that the story goes into. It's a short game. Each chapter doesn't have a ton of, like, plot to it, but there are themes of, like, because this takes place in a, I don't even know if they actually say that this is like Great Britain back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's definitely inspired by it.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So there's like, there's some colonialist themes to it. There are some, you know, the ruling class, like holding this great power over the working class and stuff like that. So there is that too, which adds flavor to everything that's going on.
I will say that the DLCs are not necessarily there for story development besides just like the backstory. They are very fun puzzles though.
Yeah.
I think the main story is fantastic. The main game is fantastic and the DLC really does add to it. But the DLCs are really there just for the extra puzzles and they're super fun.
Yeah, from a story perspective, I definitely like the main game better, but the DLCs were definitely like, okay, so you beat the last puzzle in the main game. You want something more complicated? So that's what they give you.
I think like that second DLC, like it took me so long. There was like one puzzle I was stuck on for forever. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that later, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But, you know, this is a very brief introduction to the story in the case of the Golden Idol, but I did want to give it a little bit of time because it is cool. And like, we're intentionally holding back a lot of cool stuff that like, when we get to the spoiler section, I will actually have like things I want to talk about the story in this puzzle game. And again, that was a big welcome surprise for me.
Yeah. Like the story is so good. There's so much happening in this game. And like, as a person who plays puzzle games and detective games, like the story is so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm enjoying just doing the puzzles, I need like why am I doing this? Like, why is the puzzle here? So this is definitely one of those.
Yeah. And I will say like another thing about the story too, that I think is interesting. Like this is a game that gives you however many 12 or 16 11 in the main game and then 6 more in the DLCs, like snapshots of somebody got killed. You need to figure out how they died, who killed them, etc. But that's not often the most interesting thing. Once you put that greater narrative together, those deaths are kind of just like stops along the way. They're not the point, if that makes sense. So we will put a pin in the story and let's listen to a bit more music because I want to talk about music when we come back and best to just introduce that with some of it because the music is quite good. So, the case of the Golden Idol, musically, I think the soundtrack is fantastic. It's just like a really, like, it has this air of mystery about it, but it's also super earwormy. Like, the main menu music will just get stuck in your head, and I'll just be wandering around my house just da, 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 for weeks when I was playing this. And then it has a lot of variation in different scenes and stuff too, but those are the two words I would use to describe it, mysterious and earwormy.
Yes, it like actually kind of reminded me of Secret of Monkey Island.
Oh, where yeah,
the
yeah.
song would like just get stuck in your head and you're going around the house, like it's just in there playing over and over on a loop. But the music is so good because it's not too excessive where you can't solve a puzzle while you're listening to it,
mm-hmm.
which I think is very important in a puzzle game. But at the same time, it's drawing your attention, it's setting the mood, it's keeping your interest in the game. And I think the music is fantastic.
Yeah, video game soundtracks often have to like have their own personality, introduce their own melody and stuff, but ultimately they have to stay out of the way so you can pay attention. Like, whether it's an RPG with a lot of reading or a game like this where you are just mulling over all of these clues and trying to figure out what's going on in this puzzle. Like imagine if this game had like vocals in the music, it would be super distracting. And this game, I think the soundtrack does a great job of like being really cool and catchy, but ultimately staying out of the way so that I can focus.
Yes, exactly. Like there's a lot of games where I'm like, I'm gonna mute the music so I can focus on the puzzle. And this is not one of them. It's like very mm-hmm. relaxing and helps you out solving puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What did you think about the art style? Because this is kind of polarizing out there. It's a very distinct style, we'll say.
I will say I love this art style so much. And the visuals, I will say the visuals of this game are so, so important because mm-hmm. there can be something on the screen at any point in time that you don't know is important. Like you have to pay attention and things look so blended into the background. Things look so very natural in the scene. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes the game harder and more interesting to figure out the puzzle. Because there have been things that I completely missed in the background because of the art style. The art style blends together very well. It's like, you know, in a Scooby-Doo episode, you can see the locker they're going to open because it's animated differently.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And this is like everything blends together. It looks very clean. And I just think that they did a great job with it.
Ooh, I got to ask you then. So like this game gives you an option as it has definite roots in point and click adventures like The Secret of Monkey Island. It has an option where you can have like a big shining thing on everything that you can click on. So did you play with that off?
I played with it on. Okay. I really did like having it on for various reasons. And like, it's mostly because I would go through everything that would have a shiny dot and then go back through and then read everything very carefully, making sure I got all the clues.
Gotcha. Yeah. There were sometimes I played with that on too. There were some times when I missed even those shiny things.
Oh yeah. They're hard to find.
Yeah. They can be depending on like what's going on in the art style around it. It is definitely visually consistent. So I didn't find it like the Scooby-Doo example. That doesn't happen. Everything feels natural where it is, even if it is something that's like big and loud and you know that it's important. Even if you were playing with those dots off, like the highlighting off, which I do not recommend. I recommend having it on.
I will second that. That's an awful way to play it.
Yeah. And I think that the developers would say that too. But if you're into pixel hunting, I suppose this game has that for you. But you'll learn to recognize like some stuff that's important, even if you were playing with that off, I suppose. Anyway, the art is super crude, like ugly. People are ugly in this game. Like I don't think there's anyone who's drawn in like an attractive way, kind of like caricatures almost, but like pixel art caricatures in a way.
Yeah. And I kind of like that. It's like that 90s, 2000s point and click adventure kind of vibe. Mm. And that's what I got. And then also kind of gave that like Oberdin vibe also, like the pixelated look.
Yeah.
So a little bit of a mix of everything. And I liked it because it was like not as serious as you think it would be for the story that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. I don't know, just a very fun, crude drawing look.
Yeah, there's like, I think it's like the second case, there's a guy that's on fire. And like the way he's drawn in that scene, it's goofy. Like it looks funny. It, like you said, it's not drawn in like a super serious way.
Yeah.
But it is unique. Like I don't think I've played a game that looks like this with characters that look like these characters. The animals are really fucked up in this game. They look really weird. It's cool. It's something that I've heard where people like take a look at this and they're like, ah, that looks gross. I don't like that. But I was in because I thought it looked weird. And then when you start playing it, it's super consistent throughout the whole game. Like everything is drawn in that art style, even the dogs that you come across. So it's not like it's hard to read because everything is so stylized or anything.
Yeah. It's you brought up the man on fire.
Yeah.
It made me laugh out loud the second I saw it. And it was so great. I'm like, this is actually serious. This man might be dying.
Yeah. He's got like this goofy expression on his face and like fires coming out of his eyes and his mouth and everything. Like it's just really drawn in a funny way. The other people in that scene are like, they have their mouth open screaming, but they look funny. Like I don't think there's any way for anyone to be portrayed in a serious way in this art style, even if they're dead serious.
And I love this art style. I think it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's like kind of taking you away from the seriousness of the action that's happening. And I don't know. I think it's very fun.
Yeah. In between chapters, a lot of times you'll get these like interstitial cutscenes they take this art style and like blow it up into like the big screen. And it's a little bit cleaner, we'll say, but they're given in like a comic book style. There might be like two or three like panels on the screen. There might be a short bit of dialogue. The whole thing might last like 15 seconds tops. But there are those little cutscenes in between the chapters to give you a little bit of story. A lot of times that story won't make any sense until you do stuff later. And then if you go back and rewatch it, you'll be like, oh, that's what they're talking about. But in the moment it was like, well, that means nothing to me, so I'm just going to go to the next chapter.
Yes. I loved those cutscenes though. Like they are very well done. And like you said, the comic booky style of it. Mm-hmm. But I remember playing it for the first time being like, I don't know what that is, but okay.
Yeah. It's a lot of like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know who these people are yet. Like I learned their name in the last chapter and I plugged it into the puzzle and then I forgot. But there are people who continue again through all the different chapters. I think the really stylized art style helps to remember who they are, because you'd be like, oh, that's that guy with that really weird haircut, or that's the guy with the really weird face. Like, I'll never forget what that guy looks like.
That's exactly how I would identify people, because people come up multiple times throughout the story because it's like decades long. And so you'll have to put in the same names multiple times. I'm like, oh, I remember, you're the one with the weird haircut. You're the one with like the weird glasses. Okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly. So all in all, I'm glad that you like the art style too. It is, like I said, a little bit polarizing out there. Although I think most people who play the game, even if you don't love it at the beginning, you grow to understand it as you play. And it's really distinct, and you got to appreciate a unique art style anytime you see one.
Yeah, it's very different from anything I've played. And like, it's reminiscent of older games, but it is its own thing. So
yeah,
that's great.
For sure. It's cool. And speaking of cool, we're going to listen to a little bit more music. And then when we come back, let's talk about those puzzles. The Case of the Golden Idol is point-and-click deduction puzzles. You will get a freeze frame, like we said. There will be lots of stuff around that you can click on, and again, hopefully you have that mode on that highlights all the clickables. And when you click on stuff in this game, it will take words or names or verbs, nouns, etc., and put them in this kind of word cloud down at the bottom of the screen. So you start out on this, they call it the exploring tab, where it shows you the scene, all the people, all the things you can click on. And so you click around, you collect all the words, and then if you click over to the thinking tab, that will show you a bunch between like three maybe in the early levels to like eight in the DLCs of like these separate little things you have to fill out. It might be a paragraph or like two paragraphs explaining just a summary of the scene. What happened? Who died? How did they die? Who killed them? Etc. You might have a different puzzle where you have to match names to faces. You might have a different one where you have to solve some other sort of puzzle, but it's deduction. They're never going to just straight up tell you really any of this. It's all on you to put like the pieces together in your head based on you know, what clothing somebody's wearing, what they have in their bag, what their relation is to someone who you do know because they were in an earlier scene or something like that. You can look through people's possessions. That's often like, well, required for you to get those words into your word cloud. But the stuff that people are carrying is really important. You have to really like take a first pass, I think, when you start. Like, so did you play this the same way where you open up a case and you just click on everything, gather all the words, and then go take a closer look afterward?
Oh, yeah. And I mentioned this earlier, like the shiny dots, I would go and click on all of them. Mm-hmm. I would look at everything and then open up the thinking tab. What am I looking for? And I think that they did this really well because sometimes you don't know what you're looking for, what the mystery is. So you go back and you sit there and look at every single thing you can and piece things together on your own time, just whatever comes to mind first. And I love the way they did this. The gameplay is so well done because it's so individual to each person who plays. And I mean, it's an outstanding job.
Yeah. One cool thing about this is the game tells you how many words there are to collect. Mm-hmm. So you know when you're done, which is good because, like I said, several times I did that first pass of just hoovering up all the words. And then I was like, I'm missing two words, but I clicked on everything. Oh no. So then you have to go back and look for that other shiny. But imagine you weren't playing with those shiny highlights. You would literally just be like pixel hunting because sometimes you know like what's going to be important. Like you can click on every person to look through their belongings and stuff. But sometimes it might just be like, oh, there's this thing on one of the doors that they want you to click on and read because there's a note there. And you would just be pixel hunting for what's important if you weren't using those highlights. So again, recommend using those for sure.
Yeah, I've never played it without the shinies. Like I've played this game like twice through now, and I've never done it without the shinies because I think it would be so, so difficult. Because and going back to the visuals, they're animated in a very specific way that you can't tell what is important. And even at that point, even if you have the shinies, there are things in the background you have to pay attention to, like what you said, the clothes, what people are holding, what they're doing, what could have happened before the moment in time that you're looking at right now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things to look at. So I definitely recommend the little shiny dots that help you see everything.
Yeah. And unlike Oprah Din, there's no voice acting to help you in this game. So it's all visuals and reading, you know, notes. Maybe there is somebody has a list of all the attendees of a party, and then you're eventually going to have to like match the names to the faces and then match. There's a part where you have to do like there's a dinner table and you have to match where everyone's sitting at the dinner table, and you have to puzzle out based on other clues like, oh, this person is a vegetarian, so they're not going to sit at the place that has a steak on their plate. Stuff like that. You always have to be paying attention to little details. So when you were solving these, did you ever like really just get stuck and have no idea where you were supposed to go with a puzzle? Because that happened to me.
Oh, yeah. These puzzles are hard. If anyone plays this game, like there are some things that pop up where you have to really infer what you're looking at and just make an assumption of, okay, well, this person did that, therefore this person would react this way, and that's what happened. And so, yeah, I got stuck multiple times in this game.
Yeah, often. I would say, so let's pretend that my math and memory are correct. Let's say there's 17 puzzles total. I would say maybe 10 of them I did completely by myself, and then on like five more, I had to use the hint system to get a hint. And then like two of them, I was just totally fucking stuck and had to go look up. Luckily, I found one of those cool, like, no spoiler, here's a better hint than the hints the game gives you type guides. But I had to go check those. But I will say, all that being said, every time I did look up something, or like the hint would push me in the right direction, or even the thing that I Googled would point me in the right direction. I think there was even one where I was like, nothing's fucking helping. Just tell me the answer so I can move on. Every time that happened, I looked back at the scene and I was like, oh yeah, that was there. I just missed it. I didn't connect the dots, but it was there. So to give them credit.
Yeah. Like there were so many times where I would look back after I finished something, because sometimes you just like can brute force the puzzles. And then I would go back and like, oh, that's what I missed.
Yeah.
Cool. I see.
Yeah. I definitely think, like, when I said earlier that there were some little inelegancies about this puzzle system, that's kind of what I mean. So like when you click over to the thinking tab and you're looking at, like, let's say you have to summarize the event, it doesn't make you write complete sentences. It makes you fill in nouns and verbs and maybe like an adjective or something like that. I don't know, but they're all color coded. So names are brown, nouns are yellow, etc. So if I'm looking at a blank on there that is yellow, especially for, or like there's another color for verbs, I think it's blue. So if I'm looking at a blue verb thing, I can just use grammar rules to rule out half of the verbs. And so like, that's what I'm talking about, where it's like a little bit of, I solved the puzzle because I know the difference between present and past tense, because there are no grammar mistakes in the puzzles themselves, rather than like deducing the answer. And like, whether that's my fault for taking the easy way out or not, it's just like a little quirk of the way they've designed the puzzles, where I did this like quite a bit, to be honest. And that's one of the little things where I was like, these puzzles don't hit 100% of the way they should, because they allow me to just be like, oh, well, this is a past tense sentence. I'm going to ignore the verbs that don't fit.
That's what I did too. Like,
yeah.
I would go and collect all the words, look at what I'm looking for in the thinking section. And I'm like, oh, well, this word obviously goes in that blank. Mm-hmm. We'll put that there because of grammar rules. So I have at least like 5 words already done. And then I'll go back and know what I'm looking for at that point.
Yeah. To kind of counteract that, I suppose you will not use every word that you pick up, mm-hmm. which is good. You'll pick up a lot of stuff that's just not important. And there are a lot of red herrings in like things that you pick up that seem really important, and then they're not at all. You don't even use them. There are people that give unreliable statements about what happened. People lie in this game, so that's good. And you do also kind of have to pay attention to things outside of those words that you pick up too. Like other environmental details are super important as well. So like, I don't want to give off the impression that like I open up the thinking tab and then just use like my beautiful English grammar to solve the entire puzzle. Like you can't do that, but you can just fill in a couple things and get some cheap answers that way.
Yeah. Like you have to actually know what's going on in the scene. So yes, they do kind of give you some freebies with the grammar stuff, but you have to know who everyone's name is. You have to know what's going on in the story. And I really do appreciate that. Like you have to be paying attention.
Yeah, for sure. And again, like this has been a theme in a lot of games on the show in the past, but like, I'm not always the most observant person, especially when doing puzzles or environmental details will just pass me by. I think we talked about this on the Secret of Monkey Island episode, where a lot of stuff just either flew over my head because I didn't think about it the right way, or I just fucking missed it. It's like, there's a key there and I just didn't click on it because I didn't see it. And there were a lot of things that I missed, but they were there. So like, that's on me. I missed it. It's not on the game for that in particular. One other thing to mention about like filling in that thinking tab is this game has a feedback system for what you put in to keep you from just brute forcing entire paragraphs of, you know, clues that you're plugging in. The way this game does it is it will only let you know when you've filled in every blank in one of the like little subsections of the thinking tab. And when you have 2 or fewer mistakes, it will tell you that. If you have 3 mistakes, it will just say this is incorrect. Then if you have 2 or 1 mistake, it will say 2 or fewer mistakes. And then if you get them all right, it kind of clears it out. You get this nice little sound effect. It's a cool little like pat on the back for figuring it out. Did you brute force once you got to that two or fewer mistakes label?
Hell yes, I did.
Yep, me
too.
Oh
my gosh. The second it says you're so close, you got two mistakes. I'm like, great. Let's put in every word.
Yep.
Let's see.
Every name that I'm not sure of, well, I'm just going to try this person. Oh, it's wrong. It goes back to saying it's incorrect. So actually that thing I took out was correct. So I know that's good. And so it's another one of these little like inelegancies. It does not by any means break the game or make it bad or anything like that. But like I can resort to cheap tactics in this game like more often than I feel like I should be able to. And again, maybe someone with better willpower than me would not do that. But I did because the game let me.
I loved having that as an option, just to just know where you are. Like, am I even, if I'm close, great, then I will try to figure it out.
Yeah, there were some times when it would fill in and I would be like, oh, okay, I'm going to start like mixing names up. And then nothing would change. I'd be like, oh, I'm very wrong. I need to delete everything and start over. Yes. Which is, I guess, good feedback as well.
Yeah, and I think that helps with the puzzle because it's like I would fill out the whole script and then it'd be like, nope, wrong.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's take everything out, rethink this. Is there something else that maybe happened? And then it'll be like, oh, you have two or less incorrect. And I'm like, great. All right, we're close. What could be wrong? And then it would help out. And I think that's much better than their hint system. So,
For sure. Like, and keep in mind, and this is not fair to the case of the Golden Idol, but like, we don't play video games or consume media in a vacuum. So like I'm playing this and I'm thinking about Return of the Obra Dinn when I'm playing this, and Obra Dinn had the system where it would only give you any feedback at all if you got three things correct on your big list of things to figure out. So you could not brute force that game until like the last five people. And then you could be like, okay, I'm going to start, you know, plugging names in. But this game, let's say the thinking tab has four little mini puzzles I need to figure out. Each one of them can be brute forced in this way. If you get close, the puzzle is getting close, and then you can either do it the right way if you're a better person than me, but I didn't. I was like, okay, I'm close. I'm going to start. This name is wrong. Taking this name out. Oh, it went up to say two or fewer mistakes. I'm okay. Leaving that there, you know?
Yeah. I really appreciated it. Cause like you said, Obra Dinn, I thought was much harder because there were way too many options and things that you wouldn't know if you're right or wrong. Like you don't know where you're off. And I did like the mechanic in this game of like having your close. You just need to fix like this one thing. We're not going to tell you which one thing it is, but you're close.
Yeah. As the puzzle is kind of like a teacher helping you with your homework. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, they're not going to give you the answer. They'll tell you you're close. You go and try and find your mistake.
Yeah.
So again, this isn't bad. It's just like, it let me do my degenerate gamer shit more often than I wanted it to let me do that. But you are right. I do appreciate the feedback.
Yeah.
To let me know that I'm close.
It's very, this game is actually really reliant on how you think.
Yeah.
And if you're not thinking in the right way the game wants you to, you will not get the answer. So I appreciate the feedback and like, hey, you're close. Like there's just one thing off.
Yeah. Straight up. This is one of those games where like, if you're not thinking the way the game wants you to, you will not solve the puzzle for sure. And that did happen to me a couple times where there was a leap of logic or a connecting of dots that I was just not going to get, at least not. Maybe if I like put the game down and then came back tomorrow, I would approach it with a fresh mindset and figure it out. But I didn't do that. That's not how I played this. I played this game one chapter a day for about 2 weeks. And it was, I really liked playing it that way, but it didn't allow me to like get stuck on a puzzle, put it down and try again tomorrow.
I like that though. one a day. I sat there and like binged it because I was like so stubborn. I'm like, I have to figure it out. What happens? But no, that's definitely the way to play it, is like separate it out. Because each chapter can also be its own story.
Yeah.
They all connect, but you can definitely play each chapter one day at a time.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned the hint system, so let's talk about it. Because you will get stuck. Like, unless you are like just super brain McGee, you're going to get stuck. And the game does have an in-game hint system to help you out. I think the hint system in this game sucks. I think it's patronizing, and the hints aren't very good anyway a lot of the times. But let's talk about it. So when you click the hint button, the first thing it asks you is, are you sure? And I'm like, yes, I clicked the button. I had to go out of my way to click this button for a hint. I am sure. I want a hint. And then it tells you, we really recommend that you don't get a hint. Have you considered doing this? And I was like, yes, I have considered that. I want a hint. That's why I clicked the button. And then before you, quote, earn your hint, you have to do a matching game. So it'll put like pictures up. It'll have a picture of a saw, and then a couple of people, and then like a vase and a knife. And then on the right, it will have a list of words. It will say saw, knife, the people's names, and a vase. And you have to drag the name over to the picture and do that little matching game. It is busy work, I think. The only good part about the hint system is it helped me learn some names, but I know what a saw looks like, and I'm already like frustrated by being stuck in a puzzle. I don't want to do like second grade matching games to get a hint, you know?
Yeah. I did not like this hint system. It was, it's like, it's patronizing. Like you said, it was just like, are you sure? Did you think about this?
Yeah. Did you consider about it?
Did you think maybe this something else could happen? Maybe.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that. The matching game wasn't awful, but it was so tedious.
Yeah.
I'm like, I already know this. This has already been put in my puzzle. I'm looking for one answer and I need help. So I will say the only good thing about the hint system was that it really deterred me from giving up. I was like, I'm not going to use that hint system.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to sit here and figure out what I need to do, because I'm not going to sit here and play the hint system game. So that's the only good thing it had, but I don't like the way that they did it, because it just makes you feel really bad for being stuck.
Yeah.
And I wish that they knew how hard some of these puzzles were.
I'm sure they're aware it's hard, but it's like, it is that thing. It's like, well, have you considered thinking about the puzzle? And it's like, well, yeah, I'm playing a puzzle game. I promise I'm trying. And then the fact that what you do to get a hint is literally like identify a violin. And it's like, how does that help me with this puzzle? And then after you solve the matching game, which, you know, takes a minute or so to figure out who these people are, after you solve the matching game, it will give you a hint based on the mini puzzles from the thinking tab. So if there is a thing you have to fill out that like you have to label all of these like ranks in the army and what their uniforms look like and stuff like that, you can get a specific hint about that mini puzzle, which is nice. It's nice to be able to say, I want a hint for this specific thing. But then those hints are often not super helpful. Like, you'll click a hint for a thing where you have to label members of an organization, and we'll be like, well, have you considered that someone, you know, might be lying about their rank? And it's like, yeah, I did. Like, I want something more specific, you know?
Yes.
I did your fucking matching puzzle. I want a specific hint.
Nothing hurts more than going through multiple steps to get to a hint, and the hint is something you already thought about.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
yes,
for sure.
I did think about that. I did consider that. What's the answer?
So, formal recommendation from me to, if you are stuck on a puzzle, in the case of the Golden Idol, don't fuck with the hint system in the game. Go find one of those awesome, like, no spoiler hint guides that people have written, where they will actually like go into more detail than or they'll just tell you what the game says. So you don't have to do the matching game to get the hint. But there are some that will give you legitimate good hints without actually spoiling anything for you, which is great. So I feel bad ending the gameplay section talking about the hint system, which is, like, in my opinion, objectively the worst part about the entire game.
Yeah, because it's a great game, but I just, that hint system.
But so as somebody who enjoys puzzles and you enjoy some deduction, mm-hmm. did this game, like, satisfy you in that way? Give you that moment of, like, you know, aha, I get this thing that was puzzling me, and then the dominoes fall into place.
Oh, absolutely. And this is also, I guess, the good thing about the hint system. Like, it really, like, deterred me from just taking hints. I would sit there for a good while, and I'm like, I need to figure it out. And the aha moment is so good. When everything clicks into place, it's just perfect. And I think that the story throughout the whole game makes complete sense. If you're thinking about it in a specific way, I would, like, stop the game, walk away, come back, and fresh eyes look at something, and it would be fantastic. So it's great for people who like puzzles.
So it sounded like we were trending toward our final thoughts, our summaries, and recommendations. So, Nina, answer the question for me. Who would you recommend play The Case of the Golden Idol? And then if you have any wrap-up thoughts about the game, give us those as well.
I need every single puzzle and detective game fan to play this game. I think that it is challenging. If you are an avid player of those games, you will enjoy this because it's a little bit different. It gives you something more. There are varying levels of easy to hard puzzles, and I think you're really going to like that aha moment when you figure something out. So that's who I recommend it to. It's for the puzzle and detective fans, and I stand by that.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I'll add, I didn't bring this up in the earlier gameplay section, but, like, those mini puzzles on the thinking screen all vary in difficulty also. Like, one of them is going to be really easy to solve early on in the puzzle, and then you can, like, work off of that as, like, fact that you know and keep going. So they are designed really well in that way. And I agree with you that if someone out there is a fan of deduction, if you're a fan of Return of the Obra Dinn, or if you're a fan of, you know, Sherlock Holmes or something like that, or I am not a detective game master, so I don't really know of a lot of other games that force you to use these deduction skills. But if you like those kinds of games, then this is an absolute, like, no-brainer. Definitely play it. I feel like I was pretty, like, I feel like I do this a lot where I'll, like, be here in the moment and be like, man, I was really harsh about that game, but I really like it. And then I'll go back and listen to it and hear all the nice things I said about it too. But I am kind of feeling like I was, the ratio of, like, critiques to praise was more critiques than, like, I actually feel about the entire experience. Like, I had a lot of fun playing this. This game's really good. It gave me all those good detective game feelings. But there were just a couple of things that I guess I got spoiled on from some other games that kind of stuck out to me to point out as we break it down. But make no mistake, The Case of the Golden Idol is really good, and I'm really looking forward to the sequel. Like, I don't know what they're going to do, if they're just going to keep escalating the difficulty of the puzzles, and then you're just going to have, like, 80 fucking words to put together in the puzzles in that game, or if they're going to start from the beginning again, or if they're going to do something different. But the studio has kind of earned my trust, where it's like, oh, I forget what it's called, Return of the Golden Idol. That's probably not it. The sequel, whenever the sequel comes out, I'm there. So easy recommendation for a lot of people to play this.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. Anything that they do, it's a great game.
The sequel is called The Rise of the Golden Idol. So I was close.
You were close. The Rise. Yeah.
Yeah, The Rise of the Golden Idol. It's supposed to come out in 2024. So people can look forward to that on Tales from the Backlog sometime. I will definitely be playing it. So before we get into spoilers, we'll do a little bit of housekeeping. And as always, I will turn it over to the guest. So Nina, talk about the stuff that you do. Tell people where they can find you.
I'm Nina Struggles on every platform, doing video content for Twitch, YouTube, TikTok, wherever you watch your videos. Mostly gaming content, very chaotic, cozy vibe, and I would love to have you there.
Yeah, absolutely. Cozy, definitely, for sure. I enjoy hanging out in your streams for just a cozy, fun, good time. At the time of recording, I don't know, maybe in a couple months you'll still be playing Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, because that is a long game.
It's so long.
At the time of recording, that's a lot of what Nina's got going on Twitch. But rest assured, there'll be some cool stuff out there. Like, can you tell people other types of games that you like to play on the streams?
Yeah, we do a lot of puzzle games, detective games. Every summer I do Sleuthy Summer, where I play all 36 Nancy Drew games. I do that every year. So if that's something that interests you, point and clicks, anything with a good story, I'm about that. So we do those on stream, and I am very much sucked into Like a Dragon right now.
Yeah. Me too. But people can look forward to the Tales from the Backlog episode about that in like 6 months. It's going to take me a while to play that game. So while I'm talking about myself for the next minute or so, people can go down in the show notes, find a link to stuff that Nina is doing, and go give a follow. It is worth your time, and I recommend it. So for myself, if you would like to support the show, ratings and reviews are really helpful. So when people go on their app and they type in Case of the Golden Idol, they might find this episode, and that's what we want. So that's really helpful. It also makes me feel good to see those reviews, and that's what we want too. We want Dave to feel good. You can join the Discord server and come in and chat. If you have stuff to say about the Case of the Golden Idol, the Discord server is going to be a good place to do that. I know we've got several other people in the server that played this game, so I'm looking forward to some conversation about it. I also have another podcast. It's called A Top 3 Podcast, where we do top three lists, we do drafts of weird topics. That show is a chaotic and fun time. And then if you want to support monetarily, you can do that at patreon.com/realDaveJackson. Everybody who supports there can vote in polls for what games I do on the show. And then as the tiers go up, so do the treats. So with all that being said, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, it's full spoiler time for The Case of the Golden Idol. Right, it is full spoiler time for The Case of the Golden Idol. We're going to be kind of talking about puzzle solutions sometimes, mostly talking about the story in the unfolding scenarios and the plot and stuff. So again, if you don't want to be spoiled, you should stop listening. You should go play it. It's cool. You'll enjoy the puzzles. You'll probably enjoy the story too. It's very creative. But with that being said, let us get into case number two. We talked about case one, that was Cloudsley pushing Oberon Geller off of the cliff. And then case two is called The Untimely Passing of a Rural Gentleman, where Sebastian Cloudsley, who is a descendant, I suppose, or relative of Albert, dies. But I think this is like an extended tutorial level, because they start to, in this scene, introduce some red herrings to you, and like you may look at the scene and be like, oh, he's got a bloody head. Someone came in the house and bashed him in his head, and that's not what happened. I think the solution was he fell off of his horse, and that's how he got injured, and then he died, and that's it. Yeah.
And I loved this one because I actually got a little bit stuck because the first case is very straightforward, like getting pushed off a cliff. You go through the tutorial and then you get to case two and you have to make sure you're looking at everything. And I think that this is, like you said, an extended tutorial because this is giving you other things. It's giving you so many different things you can read and look at and then have to connect the dots. So you have to look at the background and you have to look at a map and make your own deductions. Because one glance at the moment in time, it looks very straightforward and it's not.
Yeah, exactly. And Sebastian Clousley has the golden idol. It's like sitting on a little table in his room there. And is it just kind of there, like, and for several of these cases, the idol's just kind of changing hands. You don't really learn what the deal with it is for a while. But when you do, it's cool. So stick around. Case three is called The Dramatic Departure of an Outsider. You find out that Sebastian Clousley, he died, obviously. In his will, he gave the idol to Willard Wright, who is not a member of his family, but is a member of this secret society. Well, we learn more about the secret society in later cases. But in case number two, as Sebastian is laying dead in his bed, if you look up in the corner, there's a weird mask up there. And I kind of, I remember noting that when I was playing it, but you can't click on it. It's not important, but it's a weird fucking mask and it doesn't fit with like stuff that you'd expect like these nobles to have in their houses, right?
That's what goes back to like what I was saying earlier. Like you have to look at everything on your screen, even if it's not clickable, even if you can't interact with it, every single thing. And the visuals are so good because you have to notice things. Which then connects later.
Yeah. And even, again, those things that are not clickable, just because you can't click on it doesn't mean it's not important for the greater story. So the next level, again, the dramatic departure of an outsider, The dramatic departure might be Edmund Clousley. No. Willard Wright. It's Clousley. He's leaving with the idol. Yes. No, never mind. It's not. Clousley's the one with the glasses up on the stairs.
Yes, he is.
So Willard Wright is the one leaving with the idol. He sets a thief on fire. So he might be the dramatic departing one, or it might be the guy who got set on fire with the
idol. I thought he was the departure guy because he's literally just on fire, which Very we talked about earlier. And I love this picture. This is great.
It's very good. Yeah. And everyone who's got their mouths wide open screaming, everyone just looks so goofy. So, so what happens in the story here is Sebastian Clousley wills the idol to Willard Wright. And part of the puzzle is you read the will and you use the will to determine who these people are based on what they have. So Willard Wright has the idol, so you can identify him with that. He set somebody on fire who tried to steal it from him because there was a plot to try and take the idol from him. But he knew how to do it. So that was like the first puzzle that I had to really sit down and like think.
This is, I think, in this game, the first one that really throws you because they give you two really simple ones of just click on things, put it all together. And this one is very much look at what everyone has, look at what they're wearing, look at who they are, piece it together. So this one definitely took me much longer. And it's like, oh, this is what the game is. Okay. I like this.
Yeah. Case four. And like they increase in complexity as you go. It's a pretty smooth ramp up of like the number of words in each puzzle, but I had a kind of like roller coaster of how difficult I found them all. Like case number four took me a long time to figure out. Case three made me think, but ultimately wasn't that hard. Case four was tough. And then like there were a couple more in the middle of the game where I was like stumped. And then like the last three puzzles were fairly simple, even though they're way more complex. Like, I think I just like got what the game wanted from me by that point. But number four, the murder at the Little Mermaid. They're at an inn, and the story here is that Willard Wright still has the idol. This is years later, many years later. Willard Wright has the idol, but a thief comes in, kills him, steals the idol, and then gives it back to Edmund Cloudsley, who's now very old. In this scene, I remember has some red herrings in it. Like, there's some, there's an escaped convict outside who's like easy to blame. The guy out the window, you escaped convict. Obviously, he killed the guy. He has nothing to do with this scene whatsoever. So nice red herring there. There's like words written in blood on the wall that like only kind of connect to what's going on. It's a stumper. And then one of the puzzles downstairs is like figuring out who owes how much money in the card game they're playing. Has nothing to do with the murder at all. It's just another thing about the scene they want you to figure out.
I love and hate this case because this is this is the one that I was stuck on for a really long time because of the red herrings. There was just so many things, so many different suspects and objects. I couldn't figure out what was going on, especially about who the murderer was and like trying to figure things out. And like you said, you go downstairs, you got to figure out like who's winning the game, who's got this money, who owes money. And it's a lot. So yeah, this one really did stump me.
Yeah, me too. I think this was one of the first ones where I just brute forced like the name of the person who killed him because I just couldn't figure it out. But yeah, case five is called The Intoxicating Dinner Party. And this is, you know, we get into like a classic murder mystery here. So somebody has died and it turns out the story here, it turns out is that the Brotherhood, which is like that secret society that Willard was a part of, Willard and then Sebastian from case two, the Brotherhood is mad that Edmund stole the idol. They want it. And they tried to poison him. They convinced one of the servants to try and poison him. But another person drank the poison instead and they died. So they're the one who died. This one just increases the complexity of the level. There's like, I think there's four screens that you can click through. Forgot to say that in the non-spoiler section, ring the bell, everyone. But the levels get more complex. So like you'll start out in case one and two, it's just one screen. Everything's on that one screen. Case three has two screens, or case three and case four have two screens. Case five has four. And so like there's just more information, more stuff. There's more characters.
Yeah, it's so much in this case. So case four, the one that I don't like, was the first time I ever used the hint system. And then I saw case five with the four rooms and was like, oh, I'm not going to use this hint system because it's bad. And I actually did enjoy this one. It just took me a really long time to connect the dots and like put everyone together. Mm-hmm. And this is also one of those where you have to look at what people are wearing, what they have with them, infer what you can see and who they are. I actually did like this one because mostly because I came off of case four and case four was rough.
All right. So two things. First of all, I thought you were going to say this is the first case where you looked at how much there was and went, what the fuck? How am I going to do this? Because like there's a point. Maybe this was the first one, and then every single case from here on out, I open it up for the first time, and I'm like, oh my God, there's 50 words. How am I going to do this? And then I, you know, I do it. But I went through that thought process every time.
It's actually the next case. Case six was the one that I opened up, and I was like, what is going on?
And then this this case also is the first one, I think, where you have to figure something out for one of like the thinking tab things. And it seems tangential. Like you have to figure out, cause there's a young woman in here and there's two guys who want her like attention basically. And this comes back in the last case. And it, like, I was surprised that they brought it back, but I was happy that I remembered. Like, and another thing, you can go back to old cases and look at them again, which was really helpful as it gets further on. But yeah, first time when like I needed to figure out who these people were that wanted this young woman's love, but it wasn't important for this one. It was important for later. Mm-hmm. So that's cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of like characters that pop up throughout different cases. And it's just, I think it's so well done because you'll forget about somebody and then have to go back and look. And
yeah.
Yeah.
This one was tough. It took me a long time to figure out which of the servants was the murderer. Mm-hmm. I like just couldn't do it. There's one of the puzzles is you have to put them in their rooms in order. But from there, I had a really hard time because I didn't quite understand what the brotherhood was. I didn't understand because it's like he got a threatening letter from like the Dark Hand or whatever the fuck it's called. And I was like, I don't know what that is. Who were these people? But it makes sense as you go.
Yeah.
Case six, the one that you felt overwhelmed by at Ooh, first.
This one, yeah.
Called The Explosive Events in the Forest Cabin. This one is really fun. I like this case a lot. You have two screens, or three screens. One of them's outside. One of them's inside, where a dog is attacking a Zorro-looking dude. And then in the next screen, you see looks like a vase that has exploded, and there are two people that have like gotten killed by the explosion, but they're in midair. And because it's animated and drawn in that freeze frame, but like everything's still kind of moving back and forth, these people in the air are super goofy. And I just really love the way that they drew this.
It's like the perfect balance of serious and so funny at the same time.
Yeah.
And I love the animation in this game.
What's happening in this is that the Brotherhood is again trying to steal the idol from Edmund because they failed in the previous case. And to do that, they sent a famous thief named Walter Keane. But Edmund uses the golden idol to make a trap and kill two of the thieves. This is the first case where you see the idol doing something. Well, not true. You saw that it set someone on fire. This is the first case where you read like instructions for how to use the idol. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that you have to solve. And so you learn that what the idol can do is like take something from something and give it to something else or something like that. So what he does is he takes air from outside and creates like a vacuum or something in this vase. And then when they break it to try and get the idol out, it explodes and kills them. So he makes a trap.
I will say that manual is confusing.
Yeah, it was tough.
Oh, that manual. I'm like, if I don't want the golden idol, like I don't know how to use that. But yeah. this is like you go six cases in and now you kind of figure out what it's for and why everyone's after it. And yeah. I really do like this for like the story progression.
Yeah, for sure. And learning like the magic system that it's working on, like this is how it works. It shows a rotten piece of fruit in the room and you're not sure how yet, but you'll learn how later. Mm-hmm. But you do learn that it can like transfer heat onto something. If you pull heat from something else, that's how they set him on fire in the previous case.
Yeah.
So yeah, that one is cool. The other point that I thought was cool about this case six is in the room where the idol is hidden, there's a chest, and inside the chest, there is a very old man inside the chest. You can infer, and I think it's one of like the summary things that asks you, like, it says like Edmund killed them. So you can infer that that's Edmund in there. He looks like he's like 300 years old in this, in this scene.
Which is a great setup for everything that happens after this, because it's fantastic. But love this scene, love this chapter. So good.
And it kind of supports the story that people tell about what happened here, because people don't tell the truth about the events here.
Yes.
There's a guy who got bashed over the head. I think that's David Gorin, who comes back many times in the story. He tells everyone that Edmund died in that event.
Yes.
And it's plausible because he looks like he's 300 years old and there was an explosion. So.
Exactly. Which is going to set up the rest of the story. And the way that they did this is fantastic. When you go back and replay it and you see all of the signs, it's great.
Yeah, I didn't replay it, but I did go back and look through all the solutions and look through all of the scenes and take my screenshots and stuff. And I was like, wow, they really seeded this really well. I just didn't know what I was looking at yet.
Yeah.
Case 7 is called The Strange Practices of a Secretive Society. And in this case, you get to see the Brotherhood. You get to see them with all their masks, their robes. One of the puzzles is to match, like, which faction wears each mask, which rank wears each robe, and you have to use that to identify the people in the scene. Up top, there is a ritual going on. Somebody challenged Walter Keane, said he was lying. And so they had this old-fashioned ritual where they drank poison or something like that. And he survived. The challenger died. And part of the puzzle is figuring out who's in these masks. And it's really tough. This was one I needed help with. I could not figure out that there was trickery happening in this ritual.
Yeah. This was a hard one. I think this might be my favorite case though, because it took me so long and I was trying to figure out, because it's a very much, it's a logical puzzle. Like you have to look at very specific things, but it will take you a moment. It'll take you a long time to read everything, think about it, and then match the masks, the cloaks, the colors to who is who.
Yeah. And I think the detail that I saw but overlooked and then forgot about was, I think outside of this like temple, there's an initiate who's in the bushes, who's been knocked out, and you can tell he's part of the Brotherhood because he has a tattoo, and inside they have a guide to the tattoos or a brand. So that should tell you that, like, oh, this guy got knocked out, someone stole his clothes. But I just like saw it. Like, is that thing where I started the case, it's the first thing I saw. Yeah. So I clicked on it, gathered all the words, and then just forgot. So,
cause it's the first thing you see is the guy in the bushes. And so you won't connect it until later when you find the clue that tells you to look at everyone's tattoos and markings and masks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. And then downstairs in here, there's a new initiate to the Brotherhood named Lazarus Hurst, who's being initiated. And you have to solve a little puzzle about the ritual for initiation or something like that. The name Lazarus should have meant something to me, but it didn't, because again, I'm not the most observant person all the time.
I loved that downstairs section, because I also for the longest time didn't know what to do with it or who he was. Or what was happening, because there's a part in like the thinking section where it's like you have to name that person, who is it, what are they doing, and the way you figure it out is very fun, just trying to piece together. Again, it's like the markings, the masks, the colors, etc.
But I just didn't put two and two together with that name and what happened in the previous scene.
We'll come to
learn. Case number 8 is called The Crowning Celebration by the Lighthouse. And this is one of my favorite little mini stories, like mini stories as part of the greater story. So Lazarus Hurst is part of this Brotherhood, and they have this like deity or whatever called the Griffin Reborn. And at any time, somebody can claim to be this, you know, Griffin Reborn that would make them the leader of the Brotherhood. And if someone does that, they have to perform a miracle, basically. And if someone does that, somebody else will try to match the miracle that they did. And so, like, if someone can match it, then the person who is claiming to be the Griffin Reborn would be killed for lying. And then if the other person can't match the miracle, then they'd be like, oh, you're the real deal. You're the Griffin Reborn. I loved it that there was a guy named Angus Bain in this scene who has a long history of debunking these miracles. It's like the coolest, like, role. It's like, oh, you think you're the Griffin Reborn? Angus will get you. And he's gotten like six people in the past.
Oh, I love him. This scene is so great.
But not this time. Angus didn't get him this time. There's a dead body at the bottom of the lighthouse. That's Angus. What happened was Lazarus Hurst claimed that he could fly. So he jumped off of the top of the lighthouse. He had the golden idol hidden in his walking stick. And he used the golden idol's, like, create air power to slow his fall when he was falling down. And, yeah, he was fine. And then Angus jumped off, tried to duplicate it, and he died a terrible death. But this proves to everybody else that Lazarus is the real deal, and he becomes the leader of the Brotherhood. That's what this is about. But all you see on, like, the freeze frame is Lazarus down at the bottom, and then all these people kneeling in front of him, like presenting him with like this ornamental thing. I don't know what it's called, but that's all you see. And you piece together this whole story. All of this story is self-contained in this scene, and you see so little, but it's all there, and you put it all together. It's one of my favorite cases.
It's so well done. And this is like, I think this case really encapsulates what the game's about. You will never know what happened here unless you look at everything. Because you just see the legs, you see somebody is obviously dead. Mm-hmm. And then you're looking at people praising another guy. So let's piece it together what happened here. And that's the whole heart of the game.
Yeah, I think if I had to point out either a favorite, maybe this one's not my favorite because case 10 is just like great from a story perspective.
Yes.
But this one might be my favorite as just being like emblematic of why this game is so good, why these puzzles are so good, and why, like, how they can do self-contained story when giving you so little direct storytelling, you know?
Yeah. It's really hard to explain this game to people who haven't played it, when you're like, it's one frozen moment in time and you have to solve the mystery. And I think this one is a prime example of like a, you can't tell what happened here by looking at it. You like, cause case one, you obviously know what's going on, but it's like, what happened? What did we miss between chapter 7 and chapter 8? And I think it's just very well done.
Yeah. Case 9 is called The Interrupted Weekend at the Doctor's Salon, and this has a dead guy. He's been killed by a boomerang, which is from this country called Lemuria. I think that's what they called it. It is like a, in my eyes, like an India or Sri Lanka stand-in.
Yeah.
Again, British colonial history. And they have a Lemurian diplomat almost there with them. So it's a bunch of these nobles, these rich white guys, and then they have this Lemurian guy there too. And this has one of the best red herrings in the story, I think, because when you start the story, this guy's dead, he's killed by a Lemurian weapon. So everyone in the scene, or like at least a couple people in the scene, are like, well, this guy obviously did it. He knows how to use these weapons.
Yeah.
It's his. But it's not his. But he was also stealing from the room that they're in. They have these like these tablets that indicate clans, like families or something like that. And he stole his family's tablet back. So he was in there doing something wrong. It would make, and above the tablet, the display of the tablets, there are the Lemurian weapons hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
And the one that's missing from the wall is the one that killed the guy. So like, that's an easy connection to make where it's like, oh, he was stealing. This guy caught him stealing. He grabbed a weapon and he killed him.
Right.
That's not what happened.
Oh my gosh. This one is filled with red herrings though. There are so many things that misdirect you in so many different ways. There are a lot of scenes, a lot of words to pick up. This one I do think was the one that took me the longest because of just how many things and how many times I had to sit and, okay, let's look. What happened based off of what I can see? Again, the thing of like, you have to look at everything in the background. You have to look at everything that's on your screen, even if you can't click on it. Like, mm-hmm. that's it. So what a great story.
Yeah. This is the first case that introduces multiple locations. So like when you leave this library area or whatever where the person died, it takes you to like an overhead look at the manor grounds. And then you can click on different places and go there. And you see like a place where people were playing chess. And then there's a place where people were playing cricket. And there's a fountain. And they're all separate little map screens that you can go. They all have different clues on them. And this comes back in a big way in the last case. But this case also introduces a like time. Like you have to figure out when this person died. And part of it is figuring out, okay, this is what happened in the morning. This is what happened at lunchtime. This is what happened in the afternoon. So you have to like track the movement of all these people through this scene too. So it's like another layer of complexity. This was really hard.
This is very hard because like we've said, it's one moment in time where you're given clues about what happened before anything happened. And so you have to piece together what could have possibly happened to lead to this point. And I think it's just very well executed on this specific case. And it's a hard one.
Yeah. It also has like an element of people who are drugged. One of the clues is like a painting on the wall of like common hallucinogenic plants found in the area, which is like, you know, I'd love to have a painting of that in my study.
It's called home decor.
Yeah, exactly. but it was tough. Very, very tough. So what's happening in the story here is this is a political story. So it's introducing the politics of this area. So the Brotherhood has changed. Lazarus has changed the Brotherhood. Now it's called the Order Party. And he's trying to become the prime minister. So what actually happened here is he killed one of his political challengers and then framed the other person for their death. So political machinations, which become important in the next case, because you'll see what the Order Party does when they're in power, which is very cool and fucked up. So that next case is called The Triumph of Order. And what you're doing in this case is there is an old man being carried out. He's dead. So that's the dead person in this thing. And this is the scene that teaches you what's going on with the Order while they're in power. So what the Order have done is they've set up a set of virtues: moderation, diligence, beauty, and truth. And anybody who breaks these virtues is deducted merits. And you get like balance books of how many merits somebody has gained or lost, what they did to break these merits. So things like lying, lust, laziness, outlandish fashion, they outlawed music and literature, and even showing emotion in public are published by demerits. They all have different values. And one of the big puzzles here is once you identify the people, you have to write down what their balance was after all of these merits and demerits. So let's say somebody donated his castle and he gets plus 200 merits. One person offered his daughter to marry a party member, and that's plus 15. And so you're like, okay, yeah, merit, social credit score or something like that, right? No, that's not what these are.
I hated this chapter.
The puzzle or the story?
The puzzle. The math of this puzzle hurt. It's a lot of figuring out what each person did and then doing the math of their merits, demerits, how it works. So I do think this is my least favorite one. the story's great, but the puzzle really gets in the way of me enjoying it.
The puzzle's tough because you see their little like balance book, and that will say like five counts of not working, or like five times. It's actually, it's harder than that because it will say like five times deducted for refusing to get a job. And then you have to look at the different merits or virtues and be like, okay, where does this fit in these rules? What rule are they breaking? Mm-hmm. So that's step one. And then step two is figuring out that each time they break the rule, they get deducted for that time. So that was tough. And what makes it tough, helps you figure it out, I suppose, is in the scene you learn that merits are not a social credit standing. They're years of their life that are being deducted or given to them for what they do.
Yes.
So Horace Webb in this story donated a castle for plus 200 years on his life, but he only did that because he lost 180 years for 60 counts of sloth because he refused to get a job for 60 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Or 60 months, whatever. So it's like this person was given this extremely desperate situation where they're going to take away 180 years of his life, which would instantly kill him. And then he's like, okay, I'll give you my castle. And they're like, okay, that's plus 200. So your balance is plus 20. Have a good day, sir. You know?
And I do like that they added this in because this is going to take us to the end of the story.
Yeah.
And what the golden idol is and how they use it. But yeah, this is such a messed up chapter story-wise because of when you figure out what the numbers mean and why people mm-hmm. are using certain merits or demerits for things. So just very good plot-wise. But yeah, I did not like the puzzle of it all.
Yeah.
Because the puzzle is a lot. Because you have to look at different places for your numbers, for what people are doing wrong, what they're doing right.
Mm-hmm.
Do the math on it.
Yeah, I mean, I broke out a piece of paper and a pen and my calculator yep. to do the math on these. What's really fucked up here is the old man that's being carried out. He is, from the previous case, there was a young noble named Gideon Bell in that. And he has outlandish fashion. He has a really goofy hat and everything. In this one, he was being interrogated for sloth because he didn't get a job. And one count of fashion, again, he has a very stylish, I think it's blue haircut.
Yeah.
And that's against the rules. And then while they're interrogating him, so that would have been like, I don't know, just doing some quick math, estimate 20 years or mm-hmm. something like that. But while they're interrogating him, he cried 10 times. And so that's part of the puzzle. It's really fucked up. Part of the puzzle is figuring out, oh, I have to count these every time. Every yeah. time he cried, he loses 5 years of his life or whatever the number was. So they use the idol. One of the things the idol can do is take years from someone's life. That's how they aged the fruit in the previous scene, is they did that to the apple. So they use the idol to take 88 years off of his life, which took him from age 20 to age 108 and instantly killed him. And that's the old man they're carrying out, which is like super fucked up. And then they take those years and they give it to themselves.
Which is so awful. And the second you realize what's going on and what the idol is for and what they're yeah. using it for is such a revelation. I think this is just so perfectly crafted of like they had the hints in earlier cases. And mm-hmm. then once you get here, you're like, oh, okay, that yeah. man died.
Yeah, he was not an old man when he came in.
Yep.
And he, yeah.
Yep, yeah.
It's like just a... You always hear, and like you see in fiction, right, like all of these stories about how the rich and powerful prey on everybody else, and they might do these nefarious things to live forever or something like that. But this is a really cool idea for how they do it. Like, so they have this social credit system, but instead of someone having negative credit, you know, not being able to get an apartment or something like that, like there's a Black Mirror episode like that was really good, mm-hmm. What they do is they just literally take the years off of your life. Maybe you can earn them back, but maybe not. Or maybe you'll just be killed instantly.
Yeah, it's definitely like that Black Mirror episode. Like, you have the moral credits based off of somebody who is saying this is right, this is wrong.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
And also, like, let's not forget that the rules that you're not allowed to break are incredibly, like, strict.
Like, yes.
You're not allowed to have books. You're not allowed to listen to music. You're not allowed to have what they deem to be outlandish fashion. You have to work. You are not allowed to not have a job. You are not allowed to be lustful. You can't lie. And the last one, which got Gideon killed, you can't show outward emotion. And I think there's even like one of the Brotherhood people says something like, I know emotion is forbidden, so I'm holding back, but like, this is pretty fucked or something like that. There's a quote from them.
And that's what's so fun about this game is like, you can see the quotes from each person and what they're thinking in the moment. And that's also how you infer things. And yeah, that's one of those of like, I can't show emotion, that adds to the story of they can't cry because they're going to lose years off their life.
Yeah. So this takes us to the last case, which is case 11, the slight delay in the peaceful march to the king's castle. Lazarus and the order are about to march to the castle and confront the king, because the king does not recognize the order's authority or respect them or anything like that. At the same time, Walter Keane, who was the thief many cases ago, is upset because he lost 32 years of his life. In the previous chapter, you had to solve a bunch of people's credits, and Walter Keane was one of them. So by now you realize that these stories are continuing, and you realize Walter Keane had 32 years taken from him, and he plots to kill Lazarus. And this is the scene where you should figure out that Lazarus is Edmund Cloudsley, who they said was dead, but he's just been living under this fake identity. Did you figure this out before the final epilogue chapter?
Never did. I was
okay.
I think this last case and the epilogue were very shocking to me.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't pieced it together, but once it clicked, I was like, oh, that would have made sense. And I just replayed the game to prepare for this episode. And I'm like, there were signs everywhere.
Yeah.
They're hidden throughout the whole game. Until you get to this point. So I think a first playthrough is always so fun when you don't know what you're getting into, but replaying it is super fun when you can see the clues.
Yeah, I think what clued me in was throughout a lot of the early scenes, Edmund always had a handkerchief with his initials on it.
Yes.
And then in this last scene, Lazarus has it. So I was like, oh, okay.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I got it. And then part of the plot here is that Lazarus's ultimate undoing isn't because he tries to take on the king or something like that. That woman that he was trying to woo back at the dinner party scene, he's come back and trying to steal her away. But she married the other guy from that scene, Peter Battley, who... He drew him. There's a picture that he drew back then, and it's of him fighting a tiger. He's like talking about how he would fight a tiger for her. It's very stupid. It's something that like a fourth grader would draw for a girl he had a crush on.
Yeah, I love that picture. I'm like, I think there's like, because there's a whole puzzle about that picture. Like, you have to find the words in it. But gosh, it's such a crude drawing.
Yeah. So. The guy, Peter Battley, who, Peter Battley, this ties in case number three, the guy who was on fire, he's the one who tried to steal the idol or tried to get one of the servants to steal the idol. The servant was the one who was on fire. Now he has the woman, and I did not write her name down. Anyway, Lazarus comes to try and kidnap her, and Peter Battley kills him by shooting him with a cannon, which is... very funny. And it's the same mansion from case number two that the cannon is in. The idol is broken in the explosion and is sold for scrap. So like, that's the end of like the story is like the idol is broken. They sell it for scrap, but like the person who buys it, like might know what it is.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's like the end question mark.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And then the order party is torn down, basically, or vandalized. The order party is disbanded, we'll say. And there's like rejoice. The people rejoice because they can wear funny hats again.
Yeah.
And show emotions.
Good for them.
Yeah. This last case was really tough. It's very complex. There's like 8 locations. There's a lot of people involved. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time. People have been aged by the idol or de-aged by the idol. So it's like kind of hard to figure out who these people are. Like the guy who looked like Zorro like 3 cases ago, he's now an old man shirtless in a pond, like laying in ambush.
I was going to say the same thing. This was very hard for me to identify who was who and what was happening because obviously we know what the idol does at this point. So this is a long one.
Yeah. And then after this, you get the epilogue. It's called A Grand Vision of a Better New World. And this spells out the story for you if you didn't pick it up along the way. The one thing that I didn't understand was, like, I knew how Edmund could reappear younger as Lazarus Hurst, but they didn't show you that happening. He just did. Mm-hmm. So this shows you he stole the years from a homeless person outside on the street, gave it to himself. Very fucked up as a sign of things to come.
He's such a good guy.
Yeah. So that's the main game. Like the last 3 cases are a step up in complexity, but I felt like I was in a good groove by the time I got to the end here.
Yeah. I think it very reasonably steps you up as you go. Like obviously the first like 3-4 chapters, they kind of ease you into it, and then it gets a little bit more ramped up.
Yeah.
And then you have reoccurring characters as well. So that's makes it a little bit easier. So when you see your thinking tab, it's not like, oh, you don't know anybody on the screen. Mm-hmm. You're trying to link everything together. And I think that's really well done.
Yeah. I think it could have gotten easy for things to spiral out of control, but even in the last scene where you have all these different locations, it was tough, but I still figured it out. And anything that I needed a hint with, once I saw what it was, you see, it is there. Maybe you needed to pull information from like 5 cases ago, people, but it is there. You've seen it. You've seen all this stuff. It's just a matter of putting it all together. DLC number 1 is called The Spider of Lanka. I didn't really write that many notes because I thought the story was very, just kind of okay. The puzzles were fun. Like, there's a plot to, again, they have like this ritual for who's going to become the new, I think they call it the Raji, or like the new leader of the people. There's like a plot to sabotage that, and then there's like bodies switched in, and there's poisonous insects and all kinds of like crazy shit going on. But I thought it was okay. The first case of this is a card game that turned violent, and so you open it up and there's like 8 dead bodies in there, and you have to figure out, there's like a dominoes falling of like, this guy kills this guy, so this guy gets up and killed the guy who killed the first guy. And stuff like that. That was really fun.
That was my favorite puzzle. It was so good because it was a, like you said, domino effect of like this happened and then that happened and then this happened and you have to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. Story-wise, this was not my favorite. I think I was just really excited when this DLC came out that I was like, oh, I have more. I have more puzzles. This is great. The puzzles are fantastic, but the story is not super memorable.
Yeah.
And yeah, what I remember the most about it is that card game.
Yeah, it's awesome. And like, you saying that just kind of made me think, like, I would take one Golden Idol puzzle a month for the rest of my life. That would be great.
Yes, that'd be so, so fantastic. I'm like, I keep pumping out the DLCs. I want these. Yeah. Like, these are great. I don't care if the story is fantastic, but I like the puzzles and like hunting for things and figuring it out and inferring what's going on in the scene.
Yeah, for sure. I thought the story in the second DLC, the Lemurian Vampire, was a lot cooler because it's more idol stuff. It's more idol magic.
Yes. I was super excited about this one because I didn't know it was releasing until I like pulled up Steam and it was like, oh, new DLC for Golden Idol. I was like, okay, bought, installed, ready to go. Mm-hmm. And this actually does get into more idol lore, which is very exciting. And I think I struggled with this one a little bit more than the first DLC because the puzzles are a lot harder.
Yeah, they are tough. There's three puzzles. The first one I got by myself. The second one I had to Google, like, someone help me for something. Because I think the second one has like that puzzle where it's like, you need to figure out who's supposed to deliver what to the guy, and the person who you think is supposed to deliver something isn't the one who did it. And I like missed the connecting piece there.
Yeah. That one has like a lot of red herrings. There's a lot of just like extra information you don't need. And it was a tough one.
What's happening in the story, if you're just following along, this is a continuation of DLC 1. So DLC 1 is like backstory. DLC 2 is backstory. And DLC 2 ends with Albert Cloudsley and Oberyn Geller from the first case of the main game getting the idol. So it's like directly before that. So it ties everything together really well. But what actually happened was these nobles, Zubiri and Tissa, and their sword master, like their guard, we'll say, are shipwrecked. And they wash up on this island, and this is where the idol is this whole time. They are taken in by the locals. These are the Lemurians. And there's a tower outside the village. This is just like so cool. There's a tower there with something inside of it that they call the Dweller that's using the golden idol to hurt the village. And I think it's either the first or second puzzle, you have to put together like the legend of the tower and the Dweller and like learn what their belief and what their ritual is to deal with it.
Yeah. It's a lot of like building the world and building the lore before the main game. And that's what this DLC is. It's just like figuring out what happened before, why things were happening, who is in charge of what. It's very well done, but it's very confusing at the same time because you're trying to prep. And if you've played the main game, you kind of know like some names, you know what happens, mm-hmm. which will help you. But at the same time, I struggled with this one.
Yeah, it's tough. What got me, so story-wise, the village is being like tormented by this tower dweller that has the idol. So they have an elected official in the village called the Sentinel that is supposed to watch and chase the dweller away, like when it comes out or something like that, just defend the village from the tower dweller. And then when they die, their bodies are put in these urns at the base of the tower. And they think that that helps protect them as well. So Tissa, who is one of the shipwrecked people from the first DLC, he's a noble. He's elected to be the new Sentinel. And in case two, he dies. And there's a very aged skeleton in his bed. So you think the dweller ran in, used the idol to take all the years away from him because this is what happened in the main game. And that's not what happened. No. And it tripped me up so badly.
There's a lot of misdirection in this DLC.
Yeah.
All over the place.
So did you get this? Did you figure out what was going on?
No. I had to like brute force half of this DLC because I was so confused until it like pops up with that message at the end of like, this is what happened. I'm like, Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So what happened was those old Sentinel bodies that were in those urns, one of those urns in case number two is like the lid is slightly off. Mm-hmm. And I saw that. I remember seeing that. And like, I must have forgotten what was in those urns. But what happened was somebody took one of the skeletons out of the urn, put it in the bed, and then pushed him out of his window. And there's a pond of piranhas in the lake down there. And you know that that's what happened because I think his ring is down in the lake. You can find his ring.
Yes. And this is like what makes this game, like it's that misdirection. It's the, you have to look at everything on your screen and follow the trail to what actually happened. Cause that ring is there. You can see clearly what did happen, but if you can't put that together quick enough, you're not going to get it.
It was tough.
Yeah.
Like I was so close, but it was just where the skeleton came from, tripped me up.
Oh yeah. No idea.
Yeah. Case three, the last one tells you actually what's been going on here. Actually the tower dweller is just it's a robot. For some reason, I don't know how there's a robot in there, but there is.
Because why not?
And it is a, you should be able to suspend your disbelief. Like this is a very magical and weird world. So there's a robot in the tower. One of the other elected officials in the village named Lavu Mata, who's the guardian of children. That's her role in the village. She, hundreds of years ago, figured out the idol was in there. And she figured out how to use it. There's a list of voice commands that you can find in there. So she's the one who took the years away from the Sentinels, gave those years to herself, and then said, oh, the Tower Dweller came out and killed the Sentinel. Oh, no. But it was actually her doing it the whole time.
Gosh, this case is so messed up.
Yeah, it's great. Also, not lost on me, she's the guardian of children, so she's in charge of all the kids in the village. So she can just brainwash them for their whole lives to support her own goals here.
Yeah, that was fun to like kind of match everyone up with like their jobs and then figuring out what she actually does. And the story in this one is so much better than the first DLC, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's more fucked up idol stories.
Yes.
It's great.
That's what we need.
In the sequel upcoming, it's called Rise of the Golden Idol, so I think we can expect some more crazy idol shenanigans.
Ready.
Yeah. And then at the end of this case, one of the people, Zubiri, who was the other castaway, he figured out the voice commands for the robot that's holding the idol. And just kind of caused everything to go into like a crisis mode. And right as that happened, Oberyn Geller and Albert Cloudsley arrive. They steal the idol. I think there's someone who dies when they're making an escape. But the last like scene of it is them like running out of a cave with the idol. So like smoothly into the first case.
Yes.
So it's really cool. Like this last DLC sets up the main game story super well and gives us a really cool idol story of how people use it to keep themselves in power.
Yeah, I love this. It's kind of like a full circle moment. I mean, as much as I like the first DLC, this is the one that like fully connects everything.
Yeah.
And just felt like it was more part of the series. So I can't wait for a sequel and seeing more shenanigans and people trying to take control of this idol because it's great.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I like about the idol too is it has like a really specific set of rules that people have to follow to use it. Like it can only do certain things. It can't do any magic you want. It can take heat away from something and give it to something else. It can take age away from something and give it to something else. It can't like, I don't know, it can't make something appear out of thin air in front of you, like whatever you want. It can't like, I don't know, you get the point. It can't do whatever you want. You have to learn its rules and work within its established rules, which is cool. I like a magic system that's set up with like clear rules that limit its power, but it's still really powerful if you know what to do, you know?
Yeah. And like, I loved finding like the manuals that you'd see in the games of like, this is what it can do. If you push these buttons and do these things, it will do this. Yeah, I'm like, this is a very specific magical item.
It is. It's like, and it's very like, it looks like old technology too. It's like, you have to rotate this and then like, this symbol is showing, and then you have to pull the lever, and then you have to like say an incantation. Like, it's cool.
I like the idea that people are like on trial and they're like, hold on, let me push the buttons first.
Yeah. Not so fast. Can you just hold on a second? Like, I rotated it too much. I got to go around one more time. Yeah. Ah, cool. Well, that was the case of the Golden Idol. That was a good time. I had a fun running through those cases, talking about the story and about our various difficulties with some of those cases. Nina, thank you so much for taking 2 hours of your time to come on the show and talk about this game with me.
Thank you. I had such a good time. This is one of my favorite games. I'm so glad that someone else has played it and we could talk about it.
Of course. And again, looking forward to the sequel. And you've got an open invitation anytime you want to come back on the podcast. This has been great. Thank you again. And everybody who's listening, thank you, as always, for sticking it out to the end. You played the game and listened to the spoiler section. Or if you didn't play it and you don't care about spoilers, more power to you. But thank you for listening all the way through. One more plug for everyone to go down in the show notes. Check out Twitch and YouTube and other social media for Nina. Go check out what she's doing. And tune in next week for the next game to come out of the backlog.